which is kind of bizarre to see that actually take place on the House floor. The people had the flags and they were waving them, and that was when one of the that was the Ukraine funding passage, the Ukraine funding bill that went through, and we're going to talk about all of that because that was, I mean, it went to the Senate and it was going to be approved in the Senate. I mean, it was pretty much a done deal at that point. So that's billions of dollars. We're going to discuss all of it. Welcome to the show. Top of the first hour this Monday. Dana Loesch with you. And the latest with all of the House, the passage of these bills. We also have the ongoing Urban Outfitters Infantata protest that have been taking place at Columbia and Yale and elsewhere. And then, of course, we have this bizarre, stupid debate that's been taking place on the right. This is just some of the stuff that we're going to hit this first hour. But yeah, top story is this package that went through, a $96 billion aid package that included $61 billion in aid, military and economic aid to Ukraine alone. And that went through by a whopping 311 to 112 margin, went to the Senate, and it's a done deal. And so this, these billions more, I'm just curious as to what it's going to go for. Because if you remember, it was last year that the deputy prime minister of Ukraine, along with the foreign ministry, they were saying that if the EU and the United States, if they do not honor their commitments to aid, then we're not going to be able to pay our pensions and we're not going to be able to pay any of this stuff. And that's one of the things that, I mean, that was an actual, which kind of shocked me because I thought, well, how are paying pensions and all of that going to stop Russians from invading? It doesn't make any sense. So welcome again to the program. You can listen across the country terrestrially. You can also stream the program. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program on Channel 3, 47 DirecTV. You can find us on X everywhere. But that, I mean, that's the big thing that a lot of people like myself, and I think a lot of you out there have asked, because when this came out, and I just want to, in total, I think just ourselves alone, excluding the European Union and NATO, I think we're looking at upwards of nearly $80 billion already. And the, as I said, the deputy prime minister, Yulia Sergeyenko, had said that, quote, they're going to have to postpone pay for their public service and pension payments to millions of its citizens if the EU and U.S. failed to deliver promised financial aid. And that was reported actually not even a full year ago. So I would just think here's one of the criticisms that we have when we see these stories, because, you know, I read stories about, for instance, one of their ministers buying a big fancy car or something to that extent. And I read, let me pull the story up, how apparently there was like this. There's a story about some housing purchases with some of these other ministers. The one with Zelensky purchasing property in London was false. However, that is irrelevant to the fact that literally the deputy prime minister was talking about benefits and pensions. Maybe Ukraine should pull its purse strings a little tighter and stop some of this non-austerity spending so that they can help finance their own conflict. Because it's not the United States' responsibility to pay for people's pensions or to pay for benefits. And the fact that their deputy prime minister in Ukraine is literally on record saying that is asinine. That's insane. That's one of Ukraine struggles because of Ukraine. Their people get in their own way. Their elected officials, their government officials get in their own way. The fact that the deputy prime minister, Financial Times and others have quoted her, and she's on record as saying this, how do you expect people who are struggling here, struggling to pay their bills here, struggling to keep up with the tax burden here, struggling to keep up with inflation here, how do you expect them to react to this? I mean, that's the million-dollar question. How does paying for these pensions help? Help Ukraine. Maybe you don't pay benefits. Maybe some of these people don't get their pensions paid. That's one of the consequences of war. You don't get all your benefits still paid when you're in a time of conflict, and you don't get it paid off the backs of everybody else's hardworking citizens. I'm so tired of this. Lindsey Graham made the argument over the weekend, well, Putin's not going to stop if he's allowed to take over Ukraine. I feel like this is like back in during Vietnam, one of the theories that was pushed, and I remember studying this in school by LBJ and by a lot of, you know, War Inc., was this like domino effect of, well, you have this communist entity here, so that's going to affect, and all these other entities are going to turn communist, and they're all going to bow to that. That it's like the same theory that's being implemented here with regards to the Russia v. Ukraine role. Now, I don't say this, and I get aggravated because the argument on the right always dissolves down into you either believe full out in waging and backing Ukraine and waging war against Russia, or you're a Putin stooge, or you're pro-Putin, or you're a Russian apologist, or something to that effect. And the entire context of that argument is such a lie, because it's a foreign land dispute that doesn't involve the United States at all. It doesn't involve the United States' interests. And the only people who keep talking about Russia taking over and trying to completely take over Ukraine are people like Lindsey Graham. I mean, in this point, and I want to be careful here. I don't want to trust commies. I don't trust Russia more than my own government. And I have a problem already trusting my government. But the idea that they even have the ability to enact some sort of, I think, outdated Russian imperialist fantasy, that's just a dream of War Inc. That's all that is. But this is what they've continually pushed, and they were very happy that this aid package passed. There's a lot of people, Republicans are very upset with Mike Johnson, who's apparently supposed to be at the border today. Now, there was not a single, I'm going to pull this up, because I've got a lot of quotes in here from Border Patrol agents. There was not a single bit, anything in here for the actual border. You know, our border. We're looking at Ukraine's border, but we're not actually looking at anything here with regards to our own border. Border Patrol was on record as being very critical of all of this. They were disappointed that nothing like that was included in this plan and passed over the weekend. And a lot of people were very, and I think justifiably, critical of Mike Johnson. In Title III of this Ukraine aid bill, let me pull this up. And there's some very interesting stuff that's in here. This is subsection 3 of this bill. It gets into $481 million for refugee and entrant assistance. It's the administration for children and families. They are working with third-party contractors. If you want to talk about border spending, well, this is in here. Isn't that interesting? The amounts made available under this act can be used with grants for these third-party government contractors. And they work with the Director of Office of Refugee Resettlement. So it's borders. It's technically it's for the border, but it's for spending for children and families and entrant assistance. Oh yes, oh yes. And as for title, and this is Title 9 of this Ukraine aid bill. Sorry, Title 4 of this Ukraine aid bill. Funds appropriated to the president for transition initiatives. That's $25 million for transition initiatives, $39 million for USAID operating expenses. And then you've got $7.9 billion for economic support fund, $1.6 billion assistance to Europe, Eurasia, and Central Asia. There's a lot of stuff that's in this bill that's insane that's been passed. And the Ukraine aid bill also increased the amount of military training that for U.S. government agency inventories that Biden can draw down and provide to other countries, going anywhere from $200 to $400 million. There's a lot of not good stuff in here. And this all's been kicked over. Doubles the limit of what Biden can draw down for that. Expands direct loans made under Section 23. This is on page 28 of the Arms Export Control Act. Gets into, and by the way, not until, this is page 33. There aren't any limitations until all the way to page 33 about Congress asking Biden, the administration, well, what is the actual objective in Ukraine? We're going to predicate some further funding upon that. I mean, we're going to dive deeper into this later on in the program, but that's just some of the stuff. That's just some of the stuff we're looking at. Now, the other thing, we have the, what to call it, Abercrombie and Bitch Infantata. The Urban Outfitter Infantata. As I saw Urban Outfitter Infantata. I'm totally stealing it. But Abercrombie and Bitch Infantata, I think, makes perfect sense. I really think in watching these protesters at Columbia and Yale, their scarves are the new tiki torches. Their little scarves that they're wearing. Juan's getting this video. This is some of the protests at Columbia. And you got this guy who literally looks like he should be... I mean, he looks like such a stooge. The little chubby blonde kid in here. He's got his tiki torch scarf on. And they're not just... This is... They're not just talking about freeing Gaza. There's a lot of video that I didn't even send because we can't even play because there were, I mean, crowds, not just like a couple, crowds of college kids screaming, blank the Jews, screaming basically for another Holocaust. I mean, this went above and beyond. This wasn't had anything to do with criticizing Israeli government. And they really, it didn't really have anything to do with talking about freeing Gaza. This was just a bunch of anti-Semites who are coddled. And they come from academic aristocracy on these overpriced universities. And this is the stuff that they're doing. And they're pulling the Occupy Wall Street, Chaz Chop playbook by setting up these tent cities on college campuses. And it's all incredibly well organized because it's all on purpose. This is all designed to help drive up outrage that Democrats are going to substitute for voter enthusiasm since they lack it for any of their policies going forward. That's all this is. So we're going to discuss that. Also coming up, this stupid World War II debate that the right is having as to whether or not we should have dropped the atomic bomb into Japan. We're going to discuss this and we're going to give a history lesson for the historically illiterate people out there because hell to the yes, we should have dropped the bomb. And anyone who says it was bad that we did so is a historically illiterate academic halfwit who is simply repeating stuff that they're seeing on TikTok or Instagram or X. And they can all very earnestly go and do something unredacted to themselves because this is one of the most appalling lapses of judgment, reason, and intelligence that I've ever seen infect the right. So we're going to talk about the 20 years preceding Japan's involvement in World War II, because I am, yours truly, a major World War II buff and the granddaughter of a World War II sailor who served in the Pacific and fought the Imperial Japanese. So we're going to discuss a history on the 20 years preceding Japan's entry into World War II. We're going to discuss their raping and pillaging of all the other Asian countries that were around them, the tariffs and what led to all of that. With regard to Japan and the United States, a history of the last days of Imperial Japan. We're going to talk about Operation Downfall and Ketsu Go. And we're also going to discuss what that would have looked like in the context of lives lost and the attempted coup in Japan post-bomb. We're going to get into a whole bunch of history on this stuff because I really feel like some people miss those classes in high school. Today, we're diving into the future of health with Lumen, the world's first handheld metabolic coach. So what exactly is Lumen? Lumen measures your metabolism through your breath. You just breathe into Lumen first thing in the morning, and it tells you if you're burning fat or carbs. It's like having your own personal nutritionist in the palm of your hand, and I really like the idea of this thing. So not only does Lumen give you real-time insights into your metabolism, but it also provides personalized nutrition plans tailored to your body's needs for the day. And here's why metabolic health matters. Your metabolism is your body's engine, powering everything from your workouts to your sleep. And Lumen helps you optimize it for easier weight management, improved energy levels, and better overall health. But what about metabolic flexibility? Well, it's crucial. That's your body's ability to switch between using different fuel sources like carbs and fat. And Lumen, it helps track and improve your metabolic flex score, putting you in control of your health journey. So if you're ready to take charge of your health, head over to lumen.me and use code DanaShow at checkout for $100 off your very own Lumen. That's lumen.me and use code DanaShow for $100 off. And remember, it's .me. That is lumen.me. Don't wait. Your health journey starts now.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently 50 women have been attacked randomly in Manhattan just so far this year alone, according to NYPD. They said 50 women have been randomly attacked by strangers. It's the lower half of Manhattan. The attacks aren't copycats, so it's not like people are, you know, they're not similar. And it's weird because the city goes, well, police doesn't, they don't consider it to be a trend. How can you not consider that to be a trend? They said that some of them are very high profile because the victims, duh, obviously are posting about it on social media. No, it's absolutely a trend to attack women in the streets right now. This has been happening for several years in a row now, and it's increasing. It most absolutely is a trend. It's like, if you want to be serious about policing it and protecting women, then stop lying about it. Good grief. One of the busiest Atlantic hurricane seasons on record, according to forecasters. They say that it's going to be a crazy season. They said that this season is going to be the worst, well, maybe one of the worst, most destructive and costly. It has the potential to be one of the busiest on records. They said that's the consensus of at least four major forecasting services, all of whom say, ooh, it's the conditions that are in the Pacific and in the Atlantic, right there in that tropical hurricane formation zone. They say that it is just ripe for storm after storm. In fact, storm harvest was a phrase that was used. And even the Weather Channel, their outlook is pretty similar. So it's going to be a bumpy season. So Politico says they report that tax breaks to hire local journalists have been approved in New York, which they say is a national first. Decades-long struggle of getting local media. Well, it's because a lot of people are their own local media, and social media has kind of replaced that as public journalism. You don't need to have tax breaks or public subsidy of any of this, because, and a lot of people don't trust their local media because it's so politicized. I don't feel sorry for anybody in this, because if they weren't so political, they wouldn't have killed it. But they said that it's a tax break. They're going to designate $30 million a year called the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. Maybe if you actually did journalism. AI is a fundamental change in the news ecosystem, says an expert. There's going to be a lot of basic stories that are going to be crowdsourced or are going to be written by AI like this. We have a lot more on the way. Stick with us. Our partners who help bring you free radio, the folks over at Kel-Tec. You've heard me talk for months now about the Kel-Tec Sub-2K. Nothing's changed. It's still a brand. They came out with it earlier this year. And it's been shipping. And so the Sub-2K, a 9mm carbine, it folds in half. It's great when space is limited. And it's just a very innovative. The way it's designed is incredibly innovative. And I like the previous iterations. And I have the Gen 2, now the Gen 3 that they have. You don't have to detach your optics anymore to fold it in half, which is nice. The whole thing, that twist and turn, rotating fore end, it's patent pending. It just, you know, quickly and easily folds it in half. Also can just as quickly and easily deploy it as well. And some of the other upgrades that they made to it include, they have the trigger redesign mechanics. You get a lightened 5-pound pull. So that translates into improved accuracy. The action's been updated. The operating handles is it's easier to pull back. You have an internal buffer. That means softer felt recoil. There's just a lot of really cool stuff that they've improved on this. And so if you haven't seen the Gen 3 Sub-2K, it reads a Sub-2000 on the website. You got to go check it out. It's from Kel-Tec, family owned and operated, made in America, Florida based, and all their stuff, super innovative. And this Sub-2K is one of the cooler things that they make. You got to check it out. To learn more about it, visit KeltecWeapons.com, K-E-L-T-E-C, weapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
Well, if you want American military members to stay out of the fight with Russia, help Ukraine. If they go into a NATO nation, Russia, we're in a fight. So with all due respect to Senator Vance, he's wrong. We were told within 4 days, Kyiv would fall.
But is he wrong about the math?
Yeah,
is he wrong about the production?
He's wrong about the whole concept that we can't deal with multiple problems. In World War II, we fought the Germans and the Japanese.
So Lindsey Graham is upset. That's the Lindsey Graham, I think, is best described as sort of like the War Inc. version, a faction of the Republican Party. He's very upset over criticism of the passage of this Ukraine bill, which includes a lot of stuff that's, I mean, really, I don't even know why we're funding some of the stuff that's included in here. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of the second hour, Dana Lash with you. This is, you know, again, one of the top stories is that this passed. And there was also, let me pull this up too, for sale, the TikTok for sale as well. The foreign aid package, which went through And it also, I mean, there's, we were going over some of the billions of dollars that are being allocated for a number of different things in this, including like their, just some of their entrant resettlement, which is weird. But you also have, it's what, $95.3 billion in aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. That's the package. And there, it was, initially they had it separated into four different bills, because I think Johnson thought it was going to be easier for him to separate. This is Taiwan's, this is Israel's, this is Ukraine's, and then here's going to be a fourth proposal of conservative goals, which was rumored to have originally included some border provisions, but that didn't happen. So it got wrapped into one thing, and then it went to the Senate, and the amount that Ukraine would get, it would be $60.8 billion for Ukraine of this, to dissect it all up, $15 in military aid to Israel, with an addition $9 billion for humanitarian aid, which, that's going to go to Gaza. That's AKA Hamas, because Hamas runs Gaza. $8 billion for Taiwan. You're spending more for Ukraine than you're sending to another ally where the majority of these chips are being made, by the way. With our big facing off against our biggest geopolitical foe, which is China. Sometimes I think that that War Inc. wants us to focus on Russia so we don't focus on China, because we do not have the capacity or the mental ability right now in this country to do both, at least the powers that be. There's no way. So the humanitarian aid is going towards Gaza and Hamas, and the Hamas-run UNWRA is supposedly barred from getting any of the funding, which means they're totally going to get it. And then they had a couple of things that they put in there just to make conservatives happy. A forced sale of the CCP-owned company TikTok, to sell that or be unable from operating in the United States, per the New York Times. And the potential ban, the bill that included that provision was 360 to 58 passage. I think conservatives needed more than that, to be honest. So they were saying that the package of aid was not a blank check, and that they're going to provide greater accountability for Ukraine aid and forced an in-game strategy for the war. Well, again, as I was telling you the previous segment, it didn't even get into, I think it was like page 33 that they finally started talking about, well, we're going to have to predicate some of this on some caveats. We're going to need to know some things here. Johnson said it's not a perfect bill, which is what every politician says when the bill's an absolute flaming piece of feces. That's what they all say. And he said that the humanitarian aid to Hamas Gaza was necessary in order for Democrats to support aid for Israel. So in order for Democrats to support aid to our only ally in the Middle East, we had to support the opponent. Does that make sense? We had to support the opponent, which is asinine, but there it is. So it's not a perfect bill, Johnson had noted. And so there's still discussion about him being moved to vacate. I'm having a really difficult time taking seriously any House member that's calling to vacate the speakership, because they don't have a plan B. They're just pissed off and they want to play musical chairs again at the dumbest time possible, when we have a plus one majority and zero political capital. There's literally nobody who is going to be a big, strong conservative axe wielder that's going to get in that position, because that's not the makeup of the House. And furthermore, you're not going to get support. They're going to have support for some moderate Democrats to even make that happen. That's why you ended up getting Johnson. Now you understand why I was rolling my eyes so hard. I was right. And I am the person who will say I told you so. I was absolutely 1,000% correct, because my judgment is untouchable on this stuff with these morons that want to do this petty infighting. I'm watching all of this play out, and it all happened because someone was disgruntled. They had a petty grievance against McCarthy and it blew up. And you make defenders of McCarthy out of people who were not fans of McCarthy, which was asinine. People like me simply thought this was stupid to do this now, because say what you will about McCarthy, he at least had some political capital where he could call in some favors. Johnson does not have that. And if you think you're going to get someone even, you're going to get somebody even worse. Remember, we were promised this conservative utopia, Latin for nothing. We were promised this conservative utopia if we just listened to Matt Gaetz and switched out the speaker seat. And now look what happened. So I, by the way, I put I put the funding of all of this, not only at the feet of Democrats, but I put the continual funding of this at the feet of the Republicans who decide to move the deck chairs around the Titanic while the ship sank. Because they do. They deserve a portion of blame in this. I don't think it would have been as bad. I still don't think it would have been a great bill, but I don't think we would have seen all the stuff in it that we're seeing that I've been going over with you throughout the show. So that's just one of the things that we've been following. By the way, today's Earth Day. Guys, remember that? It's Earth Day. No, you didn't. You guys didn't remember that it was Earth Day. Nobody cares that it's Earth Day. So this is your annual reminder that the Earth Day founder, Ira Einhorn, killed and composted his girlfriend because he was such a believer in green everything. Ira Einhorn, just a reminder of all of these environmental things are founded by communists. All of these, all the pretend environmental concern, these people don't give a rat's backside about the environment. If they cared about the environment, they wouldn't outsource and export all their pollution to countries like China or anywhere else but the United States. They think if it's not here, then they can tell people that it doesn't exist, and they can sell you this like green theology and pretend that they're achieving all of their objectives when they're not. And this is no different. So back in April of 1970, Ira Einhorn hosted the first Earth Day event in Philly. And then 7 years after that, he was discovered to have murked his girlfriend and composted her body inside of a trunk. So he was a big ecological warrior back then. He was like one of the original, you know, ecological warriors along with the weathermen, you know, all those people. They really cared about the environment, you know, I'm sure. But his girlfriend of 5 years, Helen Maddox, she broke up with him and he was very abusive towards her. He threatened her because she wanted to leave him and all of this stuff. And then when she went back to the apartment because she left, he threw her stuff out in the street. And when he told Maddox, he's like, you better come and get your stuff. He's like, because I'm going to leave it out here in the street, all of your personal belongings. It's going to stay out here in the street. You better come and get it if you want it back. And so on September 9th of 1977, she went back to the apartment that she and Einhorn shared in Philly to get her stuff. And she just disappeared, up and disappeared. And then when police began questioning Einhorn, he said she just went out. She wanted to get some tofu and sprouts. That's what it was. She went out at night to get some tofu and sprouts. Well, 18 months later, they searched his apartment because a neighbor complained that a reddish-brown, foul-smelling liquid was leaking from the ceiling directly below his bedroom closet. And when police went and searched Earth Day founder Ira Einhorn's closet, they discovered Maddox's beaten and partially mummified body stuffed into a trunk that was also packed with styrofoam, a bunch of air fresheners, and newspaper. So then they arrested him, but he jumped bail. And then he, for decades, traveled around the world evading authorities. He was in Ireland. He was in the UK. He was in France. He was in Sweden. And then 23 years later, after he murdered his ex-girlfriend and chopped and put her in a, composted her in a bin in his closet, he was finally extradited to the United States from France and he was put on trial. And then he blamed the CIA. And he said the CIA did it. Now, far be it from me to defend some of the stuff that the CIA did, but we all know that this is absolute. No, this guy's, he's a commie terrorist. That's what he is. And he's just like every other progressive male. He's abusive and he's weak and he has a problem with women. And I've never met a progressive man. There's no exception to any of the progressive men I've ever met in my life that have not had those issues. Every one of them does. And so he went from founding Earth Day to composting his girlfriend. So that's the guy who founded Earth Day, Ira Einhorn, a murderer who composted his girlfriend. So when all these people celebrate Earth Day, especially those people on the left, they're out there celebrating an abusive woman-hating murderer who beat his girlfriend, killed her, and composted her in a trunk in his closet in Philly. Happy Earth Day. That's the guy who founded it. Now, we're going to get into throughout the program this stupid World War II debate that I keep seeing happening on the right. Now, I have friends that are involved in this and I don't agree with them on everything. But one of the things that I do kind of get irked about, and I say this is I've always been a major World War II buff. And the reason being is because I have members of my family that served in World War II. And we have members of our family that were in Europe. They were in Normandy. They were there on D-Day. We have members of our family that were in the Pacific. and that fought the Imperial Japanese. And my grandfather was on the USS Alabama. And it's always been fun to kind of like chase the USS Alabama and their battles throughout history and know that, oh my gosh, my grandfather was here and he was in this battle. My grandfather was here. He was he shot down suicide bombers. He operated one of the 50 cals and on that ship. And when I was reading that, and I ended up seeing this on social media over the weekend, members, the people on the right were saying they were holding leftist positions and saying, well, maybe it was bad that we dropped, you know, nuke bombs on Japan. And I can't believe anybody that has a heart would say that it's okay to just, you know, drain nuclear weaponry on, you know, innocent women and children. And these are people, by the way, the people who say this, these are people who have never in their entire lives ever had to make a hard decision. These are people who have never been in compromising situations where their safety was affected. These are people who have never had to make a difficult decision in their life, least of all, anything related to force, anything related to combat, anything related to law enforcement. These are always, you know, the armchair quarterbacks who sit there and they criticize everything that everybody else does. And whenever I see people say this about World War II, I'm actually fascinated at the lack of self-awareness that these people have, because normally, you know, with human behavior, when one displays an academic ignorance, a historical illiteracy that is so grand, at some point you begin to feel self-conscious and embarrassed about your stupidity. But the people that are talking about this stuff in this manner do not, because it's all about the clicks, right? It's all about the chasing the engagement, which is asinine. Because Japan, I think people forget this, in the 15 to 20 years leading up to World War II, well, at least on the Pacific side of things, Japan were monsters. The Imperial Japanese were monsters. They were roving like a band of locusts throughout nation after nation, raping and pillaging, destroying nations, and eating up, consuming, like the Borg, consuming up all their resources to feed their imperialist fantasies. And this is one of the reasons why, and we'll get into this, we ended up placing tariffs on Japan. A lot of people say, oh, the United States is mean to Japan with trade and economically, and that put Japan in a very difficult position. Japan put Japan in a very difficult position. The United States' reaction didn't do that. Let's learn a little bit about cause and effect, okay? But coming up, we're going to discuss what do they do actually right before getting into World War II? And then what were the last days of Imperial Japan like? And this is very important to know, because a lot of people don't realize that even after the nuclear bombs were detonated, there was still an attempt. There was a coup to stop Japan from surrendering. They wanted to go on. We're going to talk about this. We're also going to touch on Operation Downfall and Ketsugo. Those were the two plans that each nation, the United States and Japan, had that they were getting ready to call into action. People who help bring you free radio and also teach you about the history of all of this stuff, the history of our republic and all of the rights that we have as Americans. Hillsdale College, it's a small classical liberal arts college in southern Michigan, all about the pursuit of truth and defense of liberty, hallmarks since their founding in 1844. And one of the cool things about Hillsdale is all the free stuff that they make available, and you don't have to pay anything for it. And that's what's really awesome. Like, for instance, their Digest and Primus that they send out to almost 7 million homes. It deep dives into a number of different current event issues while also incorporating lessons about natural and civil rights. For instance, the American Medical Association. You want to talk about the rampant DEI and CRT that's ruining everything? Think about medicine, because now the AMA has said that medicine is, quote, imbued with white supremacy. And so they have to lower their standards now on medical school entrance tests. What does that mean for you when you go into surgery? See? So this is all the stuff that they discuss. It's a free digest of liberty, and it provides smart constitutional commentary from leading conservative minds. No cost or obligation. They print this and mail this just as part of their educational mission on behalf of liberty. You can sign up for your free subscription today at dana4hillsdale.com. That's Dana, F-O-R, Hillsdale.com.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
So he is a tried and true, like, dyed in the wool racist. Like, in his, the core of his being, he's a racist. So I don't want to hear what he has to say about what he's done for black people. He's done very little for us. And he is at his core truly, truly a racist. And
you even hear what he says about immigration
and which countries he wants people to come in from.
That's John Legend saying, and guess what? He's talking about Trump. That's like the breadth of all of the analysis of why people don't like him. Well, it's, you know, because he's a racist. I mean, if you're going to criticize him for stuff, criticize him over, you know, stuff that he actually does. But I'm so tired of seeing this over and over and over and over and over again. And hearing it, that's the all that they have. Well, he's a racist, and you know, just does racist stuff, and he's, you know, like racist and stuff. It's racisms. That it's so dumb. Now, coming up, we're going to talk about Abercrombie and Bitch, the Infantata Abercrombie and Bitch that's at Columbia. And some of these other universities. I don't know if you've seen some of the protests. If this was one of my kids that was there, the world doesn't have the amount of flip-flops that I would be having in my hand smacking kids and their friends. There is not enough supply in the world. So where are the parents of these brats, by the way? And have you seen some of them? I mean, they're literal trust fund terrorists. That's kind of redundant, is it not? We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to continue on dissecting the stupid debate that took place on the right. Well, I mean, you know, you shouldn't have been dropping the atomic bombs on Japan, World War II. We're going to get into all of that and more. Stick with us. More of The Dana Show coming up. The best coffee you can drink, veteran-owned, veteran-run. They hire active duty and vets, and they stand up for our first responders, our police officers, premium coffee for premium people who love America. They got all kinds of delicious roast profiles. And when you join the Black Rifle Coffee Club, you get free shipping, your roast of choice shipped to your door, again, for free, however often you want. And you can save 20% using code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com. Check out all the different roasts they have. And they also have a variety of choices on how to have your coffee. If you want ground beans, whole bean, K-cups, ready to drink, you can find grinders, kettles, all kinds of stuff. Everything that you need for the perfect cup of coffee. So try for yourself today at blackriflecoffee.com. Order today and get 20% off using code Dana. That's 20% off using code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com.
Do other student groups have this kind of target on their back, or do you feel that you are being targeted because of the fact that it is in solidarity with Palestinians and against what Israel is doing to Palestinians?
Oh, this is 100% targeted. Every single protest that we have, there's a group of counter-protesters that bring all of their items, their flags and things like that, and they're not seen as having unsanctioned protests or really receive the kind of disciplinary warnings that many of our fellow organizers receive just for being seen at these protests.
Well, that's a lie.
And so there is definitely some hypocrisy here, especially you can kind of see it with the students that were sprayed us with the chemical weapons and the fact that there's no public information as to what happened.
Them, story.
But rather, the university is actively discussing what is happening to the students here and making it a whole public spectacle rather than when we haven't done anything to physically harm students, whereas those that sprayed those chemical weapons physically.
So the Charlottesville Tiki Torch protesters meet your match. This is the Abercrombie and Bitch Infantata. The protesters at all of these college campuses. And that individual, that's Ilhan Omar's daughter, Isra Hirsi, who was saying that, oh, her group is 100% targeted. First off, the fart spray thing, that somebody, one of their own people pulled a prank. One of their own protesters pulled a prank on the other one. And they decided to make up a story and blame Jewish students for it and say that it was some kind of like chemical attack. And it was, I mean, that's so stupid. It defies all logic. But they're arguing essentially that they don't want any anti-protest to disrupt their protest. That's what she's arguing for. And she was one of the people who was taken into custody over the weekend because they were screaming invectives, and their protests go way beyond protesting for Hamas in Gaza. Like they are actively like denigrating Jewish students and making it unsafe by like barring their entry to certain buildings and all of this. So it goes way beyond that. That's why, by the way, that's why they were being removed. Welcome back to the program. Top of this second hour with you, Dana Lash here. You can listen to the radio program across the country, and you can also watch the simulcast on all platforms everywhere. But that's it. Columbia University has also canceled all in-person classes as the protests have dominated the campus. And even like the rabbis near in the area have been issuing warnings to Jewish students. So the Columbia University, all their in-person classes, because everything's been escalating. The school's rabbi warned Jewish students not to return to campus amid of horrifying spikes in extreme anti-Semitism. There's been a lot of stuff that I can't even play that's been on video because we'd have to censor the whole thing and you wouldn't be able to hear it. It's really nasty stuff. I mean, people aren't just like making this up. It's not hyperbole. I mean, I've seen, I don't know how much video there exists out there. People don't even care about being caught on video doing this and saying this stuff anymore. They don't care. Because they've been given a pass by the left. I mean, this isn't about protesting for Hamas in Gaza. And by the way, when you're protesting for Gaza, you're protesting for Hamas. This isn't about protesting for Gaza / Hamas. This isn't about protesting as a criticism of the Israeli government. These are organized students, organized by many, many different forces. And this is about targeting Jewish students on campus. And the fact that it's gotten so unsafe. So Columbia is it's private property. And so for NYPD to even be there means that the university had to call them. And the university is pretty leftist. For the university to have to call NYPD tells you everything that you need to know. They had to call and bring NYPD on their property because it's been that bad. That bad. The way that these demonstrators, they make it to where if it's on the, you know, they set up near temple on the campus, or they set up and put their little tent cities out there so that they make it to where Jewish students must go through them or must go past them in order to get where they need to go to access different parts of campus. It's done by design. It's purposeful for harassment, targeted harassment based on religion. And then when they get in trouble for their behavior, then they cry that they're the ones being victimized. And that's not how it works. They've been victimizing everyone else. Accountability isn't victimization. And so they've been, I mean, it's, and it's what, like right before Passover. They also, at Columbia University and the NYPD, they actually made it clear that they could not guarantee Jewish students' safety. And then Ilhan Omar's daughter, this 21-year-old trust fund terrorist, claims that she has nowhere to live or eat after she was suspended from school. She's like, oh, I'm homeless now and I'm starving. Why don't you have your mom or your dad, uncle, whatever, help you out? I mean, that's just saying. Why don't you have one of them help you out? I mean, you know, if you FA'd and then now you're FO'ing. So I don't feel bad for you. You don't get to be a victim. That keffiyeh that they wear, that's the new tiki torch. It's the exact same thing as the tiki torch in Charlottesville. They are those people. They are the exact same people. They just wear a scarf instead of the tiki torch. It's the same thing. And so she's like, I don't know where I'm going to sleep. I don't know what I'm going to do. Teen Vogue has been there to lionize her as far as its propaganda. And you want to know why young women, or why women in general, survey the way they do and all these polls that are taken? Because they're brainwashed from the time they're teenagers, impressionable young women, by everything. The media they consume, the women-oriented fashion, magazines, everything. It's all designed and organized to pierce the minds of impressionable young ladies and brainwash them. Of course, she was raised by Ilhan Omar, so, you know, go figure. the failed rocket doesn't fall far from the launch site on top of the school building. You know, it just goes to show. But she's the one who's victimized in all of this. Now, you know, she was at Barnard College. She said the administration there hung her out to dry. She can't go to her. She can't use her dining plan. Well, yeah, because you violated their rules on behavior. I mean, what did you think was going to happen? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it shows it's been anarchy there. It's screaming. People have been saying, yes, we are all Hamas. And then a slur. That's what the protesters have been saying. And I'm not talking like one or two of them. So I told you. And the fact that a lot of these students can't even go to classes there safely is wild. Just wild. These colleges, you know, they created this situation for themselves. And I hope a lot of people now see this is what we were kind of warning about. They're using the left always uses, they rehash the same tactics. This is the Occupy Wall Street tactic that these these campus protesters are using. They're just going to camp out. She's not homeless. She can get a little tent, live in one of those little tent cities. Right? Same difference. She's just going, she's struggling so much with her expensive iPhone and all of that stuff. And she documents her struggle. My word. Just some of they're literally the exact same. That scarf is the tiki torch. One of the other things we've been discussing too with all of this, and we're going to come back to the college stuff, is this ridiculous, stupid World War II debate. I don't know if you've seen some of this that's taken place on the right. It's so dumb. Apparently it came up that, I don't know, there was an argument over on the right. There were arguments over whether or not the United States should have dropped the atomic bomb on Japan, whether or not that should have happened, whether or not they should have done it. And friends of mine have been even debating this. Some of them saying, well, you can't debate the dropping of nuclear bombs on civilians. You know, if you're arguing that it's good to drop nukes on people, then you're evil. I think I actually think it's kind of evil to frame the debate in that manner. And that's not I reject the framing of that debate, just like I would reject the framing of a bad argument on the Second Amendment or the framing of an argument about removing women from women's sports in favor of men. It's just bad context. And here's the context of it. Preceding Japan's entry into World War II, they spent well over a decade, nearly two decades, just plowing through all of the nations that surrounded them, gobbling up their resources for their imperialist goals. They wanted to expand and control everything. And what China, good heavens, Philippines, even India. I mean, good grief. They were fighting with everybody. And this idea that they were going to surrender after the bomb was dropped is a lie. It's not an idea. It's an absolute lie. In fact, there was a coup attempt even after the bomb was dropped to challenge the government of Japan. And these were other military officials and other leaders within Japan because they were not unified. Their own government wasn't even unified on ceasing hostilities. Some wanted to continue. In fact, they even had plans to do this. Operation Katsugo. And again, for those of you who aren't familiar, I'm a huge World War II buff. And we had family that served in World War II on both sides of the globe. And my grandfather particularly was in the Pacific fighting the Imperial Japanese. There was a really great piece that came out. It was called There Are No Civilians in Japan. And it's from the National World War II Museum. And it gets in. There's a lot of history here. But it touches a little bit on, and this was, by the way, the title of that came from, this was in 1945. It was U.S. Army Air Force Intelligence that had issued this report and distributed it within other officers in the Pacific, saying that that Japan was using its entire population as a military target, a military entity. And it wasn't hyperbole. That's what a lot of people think, people who don't understand or are even aware of Operation Ketsu Go, because that's exactly what Japanese leaders were organizing to do. There were enough of them. They were rejecting any and all surrender. And so the idea, which translates into Operation Decisive, Operation Ketsu Go, was that they were going to force a ground invasion and use literally like every man, woman, and child in Japan as a military, as a soldier. We're going to talk more about this because that's exactly what they were planning on converting their multi-million member population into a military unit. We're going to talk more, like I said, about this coming up. But there are a lot of people who just don't know history here. As we move, our partners that help bring you free radio, Gold Co. Precious Metals. I mean, you might as well. You need to get some gold and silver and protect your savings with actual metals. And Gold Co. makes it easy. It can be a very oversaturated industry, the gold IRA field. But you really have an easy choice with Gold Co. because they're incredibly transparent. They have no critical reviews. I mean, that's a great company. I worked with them. And in this volatile economy, I don't really think you want to wait to find out how bad it gets before you decide to protect, you know, what you got with gold and silver. Use it as a hedge against inflation. Gold Co. can help. They have a free 2024 wealth protection kit. So you can learn how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver as a listener of this show. It's only while supplies last. They're going to walk you through the economy of how gold IRAs work and make it easy for you to get the benefit of owning physical gold and silver. No pressure approach. Get started today at danalikesgold.com and get your free gold kit from Gold Co. Learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver and get your complimentary wealth protection kit. Visit danalikesgold.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So New York Home Depot, they've actually had to hire guards and dogs to keep their parking lots safe from thieves and aggressive illegal entrants that have been flooding the parking lots. They said that there have been numerous private security guards, people with bulletproof vests, German Shepherds, Belgian Malinois in tow patrolling the Home Depot in New Rochelle. That's just one of them. They said that it's just about omnipresence. It's like, you know, they don't go out and bite anything, but there have been people who come into the country illegally that aggressively solicit for work, or people who loiter there, try to camp in the parking lot. They said that there, at one point in the Bronx, there were at least 30 illegal entrants that were at the doors of a Home Depot, and they were trying to like make contact with contractors and all of that to get work and aggressively confronting shoppers. Some of them were trying to sell them phony Apple AirPods or demanding money when they were leaving the store. And they said that if you're a woman particularly leaving the store, they really would target you. So they had to bring in all the privates. This is why you got to have a gun. But in New York, they make it to where you can't because they don't want to keep you safe. It's all about making sure that the criminals have enough people to victimize. That's all they care about. A wave of narco-chemical terrorism. Walmart, apparently in my area, is not the only ones using drones. Apparently now the cartels may do them as well. This from a British newspaper. A wave of narco-chemical terrorism. The cartels may soon be delivering fentanyl from drones. Dropping fentanyl from drones. And maybe weapons or who knows what else. They said this has already been happening with the Jalisco New Generation cartel. Apparently they've been doing this. And then they've also been using it as a way to drop chemical agents on enemies in different Mexican municipalities. Oh my heavens. Well, you knew it was coming. There's currently no response from the government on how to deal with it, especially either with Democrats or Republicans. Guess what? There's finally some kind of high-speed rail construction. They don't need this. It's literally like a two-hour drive from L.A. to Vegas. They're going to do a high-speed rail between Vegas and California. Privately owned Brightline. They're going to break ground next week on a $12 billion high-speed rail project connecting Vegas and Southern California. I think this is actually incredibly stupid. It's literally a two-hour ride. That's it. It's a two-hour drive through the desert. That's it. This is one of the dumbest expenses I've ever seen. But they said that they're electric trains. They're going to depart every 45 minutes. They're going to go from a station of Rancho Cucamonga which is a LA suburb to Vegas, $12 billion. Remember, California has had billions of dollars planned for a high-speed rail, like from LA to San Francisco that never got done. It's like one of Gavin Newsom's biggest embarrassments. And apparently, Ontario came out with a study saying that the people who like loud cars are young and male, and they are psychopaths. Hi, I like loud cars. Stick with us. We got more in store. People who help bring you free radio. It's our friends over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the nation. And they want to make sure that your money actually goes towards, you know, your cell phone service and not towards politics at the ballot box, like in support of DEI or CRT or abortion on demand as birth control, taxpayer funded. And they have plans to fit any type of budget, whether it's a big family, small family, singles, businesses of all sizes. They have something for you, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. You're getting the best service in your area, but you're not funding the communist left. Free activation using code Dana. You can keep your number, you can keep your phone, or you can switch and upgrade, get stuff entirely new. It is your choice entirely. And they have a 100% U.S.-based customer service team that's going to make it super easy and fast for you. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana and get that free activation. Make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Tent City. The Tent City. You're hearing the background of some of it, where they've sat up, I guess, in the quad of this. Which campus is this? Is this Columbia? There's apparently they're starting to do stuff at MIT. They were doing stuff at Yale. This is Yale, I think, probably. The Tent City, the one that we just saw on the simulcast, was from Columbia. This is exactly what the Occupy and the Chaz Cha people did. They want to turn it into the People's University. Whatever the hell that means. They say this stuff and they have no idea what they're talking about. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Bottom of the second hour, the Tent City. They all got the same kind of tents. That's super convenient that they all just had the exact same kind of tents, isn't it? So convenient. That doesn't look like it was just bought in mass quantities at all and distributed, because literally nobody has that many tents. There's that many people. No, that's not. You all know that. And they just have their junk thrown all over the quad there. This what you're looking at on the simulcast is Columbia. So welcome back to the program. Again, Dana Lash with you. You can listen coast to coast, bottom of this second hour. That's the, a friend of mine said it was the Urban Outfitters. I'm adding the Abercrombie & Bitch Infantata. They identified that little chubby blondster. What is this? Pull that dude up. Pull that. This is one of the, find this. This is one of the videos that the guy with his little, he's like one of the Charlottesville guys, except the keffiyeh that he has. That's his tiki torch. Those are the new tiki torches, guys. Those scarves are the new tiki torches. Well, apparently he was identified. Now, he was one of the people there that they had just torn up an American flag, and he was protesting for Hamas. Yeah, somebody tore up the American flag. Oh, they're so excited. They took down the flag and tore it up. Ah, they're like, he turns around. He's like, oh, there's a camera there. Yeah, there is, Buzzcut McGee. There is. He literally looks like a Lenny Riefenstahl extra. He does. He looks like a Lenny Riefenstahl extra. I'm waiting for him to turn around and say Heil Hitler. He's been identified by Stop Anti-Semitism as Thomas Kincervic. His father, Matthew Kincervic, is a professor of English and the vice provost for faculty affairs at the University of Delaware. And they said that he appears to work part-time at Yale Center for British Art when not participating in rallies, destroying the American flag. The dude that you see on your screen, he turns around. That's a shocked look, by the way. Doesn't he look shocked? Like, oh, I'm on camera. Because I feel like he knows that there's going to be some kind of accountability, maybe. What great, look at the work they're doing at Yale. Of course, his dad's a professor. Of course he is. Of course he is. So he's a pro-Hamas. He literally looks just like little Hitler youth. That's what this dude looks like. And his dad, if I'm honest, kind of looks like a D-bag too. Picture of his dad, who's the, I just saw a picture of him. He's apparently the vice provost of something or other. This guy's studying, apparently, British art. I've got to laugh out loud. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, you have Passover, right before Passover. They're doing this all on purpose. It's organized and it's done all on purpose. I think I'm all for it. If you do stuff like this in public, I'm all for you being publicly named and shamed. I'm all for it. I think that it's fitting. Now, it's being, again, anti-Semitism reported that that little Hitler Youth Jr.'s there, his dad, Matthew Kincervic, is the apparently professor of English and the vice provost. Anybody who does, if you were not born in the 70s or 80s and you did not have your photo taken with, you know, it, at an Olin Mills studio in the 70s, 80s, or early 90s, holding your chin with like a ghost vision of you up above, you guys know what I'm talking about? Then there's no reason why this picture should exist like that. That's just, you look like a stooge. Stop it. It shouldn't surprise you that this dude's kid apparently has been the one that's was there at that rally tearing down the flag. All of this has been predicated upon such a lie, an absolute lie. Like the whole thing that Israel's committing genocide. No, they're not. Or that Gaza's occupied. Gaza's not occupied. Hamas, and I mean, if you want to say it, that's a failed colonization attempt by people who no other Arab nation will allow them to come and live within their borders, because just ask Lebanon what happened when they tried to do that. It never ends peacefully. For generations now, a couple of generations, you have pro-Hamas people voting for Hamas, approving of Hamas. I mean, I keep seeing video after video of the attacks on October 7th. There sure are a hell of a lot of civilians there helping spit on some of the women and kick some of the dudes that have been taken into captivity by Hamas when they motorbike it back into Gaza. Really interesting that. But there's colonization of land that Israel gave them, but there's no occupation. That doesn't exist. That's not a real thing. But you have all of these college young adults that believe that this is the way it's happening. And this is, by the way, now at Stanford as well. It's at Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Stanford, MIT. All of the big Ivy League schools, you are told, are the creme de la creme of higher education that are producing the absolute worst people and the worst protests. It's abysmal. It's radical ideology. This is what happens when it comes into play, when it matures and it comes into fruition. This is it. And by the way, I also don't believe that Israel's response to Hamas attacking it on October 7th sparked these protests. They have just been waiting for an excuse to go out and do this. They've been waiting for something. That's not the cause of it. These people and their religious war is what is the cause of it. That's the reality of it. And then now you're seeing it increase tensions in all of these college campuses. They think that it's easy to target. I honestly feel like some of them think it's easy to target Jewish people. That's why they think it's like easy to target Christians, because Christians aren't running around cutting your heads off. I don't know. It's really absolutely amazing to watch all these people show you who they are and what they support. Like with the whole World War II stuff that we've been talking about. Because just as you've been seeing this on the left, on the right has been arguing as to over whether or not we should have dropped the bombs on Japan. The answer is yes. Anyone who's arguing against it is literally historically illiterate. And we were talking about Operation Katsugo, which is what Japan was. They were getting ready to turn their entire population into plainclothes soldiers, where you wouldn't be able to know the difference. I mean, this is a simple fact of any student of history. I mean, that's and we had Operation Downfall. They had Ketsu Go. Operation Downfall was the United States' plan if Japan was to invade. And our casualty estimates were something like 500,000, almost up to 1 million, just ours alone. That doesn't include the number that was being estimated for Japan, because they were planning on mobilizing with Ketsugo at least 5 million men, and they were going to have over 6 million in total when Ketsugo was fully realized. And they were every male was from age 15 to 60 was going to be a soldier, and every female age 17 to 40 was going to be a soldier. And this was over a quarter of Japan's entire population that they were going to mobilize into becoming plainclothes civilian soldiers. That's why that report went out that there were no civilians in Japan, and it was getting into Operation Ketsu Go. And a lot of people who have been arguing against the nuclear bomb, again, historically illiterate people, were somehow like making up some stupid thing that it was like a racial thing or something that our military put out, which was so stupid. But I mean, this would be they and the people that they were mobilizing would be in the targeted invasion area. So the United States had a plan. Japan had a plan. Apparently, too, we had created a whole bunch of Purple Hearts in preparation for this. And it's apparently a huge we created this massive production. We had we manufactured a whole bunch of Purple Hearts that we still apparently have in our possession, in anticipation of having to do of Operation Downfall. And so when you look at the casualties from dropping the bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima compared to the casualties that absolutely would have occurred with Ketsu Go and Operation Downfall, there's not even a comparison. You're looking at, and when it, and this is what geopolitics is, it looks at the best numbers. You're looking at a cost of like several hundred thousand to multi-million casualties. That is indisputable. And the other thing too is I really feel like for the people that pretend to be America First, you're not arguing it. Because America First doesn't give a rat's ass, especially in wartime. It's the other country's responsibility to care about your citizens. And this is war. This is why it's always a last resort. Because in a war, it's America first. And in a war, it's our civilians, our citizens first. What is going to minimize our casualties? What is going to minimize our loss of resources? Either be America first or don't be American first. But don't sit here and use the slogan and act all fist in the air, MAGA or whatever else, and then argue this type of stuff. What's the matter with you? This is not an America first stance to argue that we should not have limited the casualties, the known casualties of several hundred thousand compared to the absolute casualties that we know would have occurred, multi-million with Operation Downfall and Ketsu Go, by not dropping the bomb, and act like that somehow that's an America First position to say that we should have lost millions more so we could virtue signal about not dropping a bomb. Sit down. A lot of people need to be hitting the books instead of hitting the keyboard on social media. A lot of people need to be hitting the books instead of hitting the podcast circuit. Good grief. It's embarrassing. It's especially embarrassing to watch anybody older than me talk about this stuff and not get it right. History's not hard. You know, all of these facts are hidden in things they call books. But that's facts. We would have lost millions upon millions upon millions of people. And Ketsu Go was an absolute thing. The Allied invasion, the area of the targeted area of invasion that we would have done the home and the land invasion on were the some Japanese islands. They were the home islands, and it was near Honshu. They were the proposed landing sites for that operation. It would have been horrific. It would have been horrific. And my grandfather would have been one of the individuals involved. In fact, I think everybody over in the Pacific would have been. And it was expected, there was discussion that would have involved British participation. And there were several different sub-ops with it. But that's, I mean, you know, ultimately, these operations, you would have seen, in fact, Japanese propaganda in support of Ketsu Go was, quote, "The sooner the Americans come, the better. 100 million die proudly." That was their slogan the summer of 1945. And again, don't forget, after Nagasaki and Hiroshima, there was the attempted coup. They were going to overthrow parts of the government that wanted to surrender. There were major factions in the Japanese government that did not want to surrender. They wanted to keep going. So for those people who thought that this was going to end peacefully, it never was. This was literally the only option left. And people who think otherwise, who thought the Japanese could be reasoned with, are also historically illiterate about the 20 years preceding their involvement in World War II.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Man, this story has everything. A guy fishing, getting a gator out, old people running everywhere. They were outside trying to enjoy the day, and a gator starts chasing them. And a guy in a flannel shirt that has the sleeves ripped off that showed up barefoot, barehanded, and wrestled the 8-foot gator. I mean, this literally is the story that has everything that you'd ever want in a Florida Man story. So let's start with it. A Florida man, there's two headlines here, and it's the same story. First is a Florida man went fishing and pulled out an alligator that chased him. And then the second part of this story is a Florida man wrangled an 8-foot gator with bare hands and without shoes. He was watching a hockey game and apparently all hell broke loose. He's an MMA fighter and he went out and he had wrestled this gator. This is a crazy story. First off, look at, I love that the shirt's sleeveless. That's my favorite thing about this story. So this guy's blue collar brawler. I'm correcting myself. There's two stories here. The MMA fighter, he captured a gator that was found in, it was chasing people near the school, and the gator was like apparently running towards everybody and scaring the bejeebus out of everybody. And he heard what was happening, and apparently, because he lives right there, he was watching a hockey game, and he's also, I should note, a licensed trapper. And he was watching the hockey game, and he went and wrestled this gator, and that was the end of it. Florida Fish and Wildlife took it into custody. Barefoot, I just was thinking he's on his bare knees on that pavement. That had to hurt. But the shirt is my favorite thing in the world. That is how you wear a sleeveless shirt, gents. So kudos to him. The Florida man who went fishing and pulled a gator out that chased him. Juan, the screenshot or the screen grab of this gator running at people is my favorite thing. Because the gator's like basically hovering. It's going so fast. And there's a lady with a helmet on who's jogging. You can tell she's out, you know, doing her exercise. And it's at a park. And this dude fishes, pulls this gator out of the pond, which at some point you're going to. My question is, at what point did he realize that he had a gator on, and when did he run off? Because this thing is well up on land chasing people. But he said he was trying to reel out his catch, and then he didn't expect the gator to come out, but the gator apparently was mad, started chasing him, and took off. Florida Fish and Wildlife had to intervene, they had to get involved, and they captured this gator. Okay, so this man was accused of shooting another McDonald's guy in a guy at McDonald's, a patron, after an argument over sauce. There's a Florida man who was accused of shooting a customer at a McDonald's drive-thru because the first guy didn't get the sauce that he wanted, so he got mad, and another guy intervened, and the guy who intervened apparently got shot. And it just wild. And it was an older man. It was a 19-year-old versus a 48-year-old. The 48-year-old was the one who apparently started the problem. He was arrested. He's in jail. No bond available. Third hour on the way. Stick with us.
Most of these dollars are really an investment in America, in our defense industrial base. We will be producing the weapons that the Iranians use to defeat Vladimir Putin. So it's a good moment for the country.
They'll be using weapons that Iranians use to, you know, that Russia and Iran are besties, right? Good grief. That's Senator Bob Casey. We don't need to be doing any of that. They can just, good grief. It's the same thing. This package that passed, it's just insane. We were talking a little bit about it first hour, all of the hundreds of millions of dollars that are in this. I mean, heaven forbid we don't pay the pensions and benefits of Ukrainian government officials. And if you think I'm making that up, then you should probably, I refer you to the deputy prime minister of Ukraine herself, who had said that, quote, if they did not receive the promises on from the U.S. and EU about financial aid, then they weren't going to be able to pay their pensions and benefits. That's actually her quote. So she's on record as saying that. Financial Times reported it, Wall Street Journal, a lot of other news outlets did as well. And she said it repeatedly. So, yeah, that's not really, you're in a war. That's the last thing that you should be worried about funding. So, again, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you at the top of this third hour. And we're going to talk to our friend Stephen Yates coming up as well. But this, not a single thing in here. The Border Patrol was, I was looking at my notes on that. They were quite upset. Oh, understandably so, about the lack of anything in it. I mean, literally, there was nothing in the bill for any of them. Nothing in for the force multiplier of wall construction, you know, nothing more. Chip Roy had a big statement out about it because he opposed the bills. And he was saying that they were brought forward to achieve a predetermined outcome, an unpaid for aid package that did nothing to secure the border, nothing. And he said Republicans had a show vote on H.R. 3602, which was a version of H.R. 2 that removed E-Verify and then added $10 billion in funding to, you know, support what they said, support some border states. Roy said that he wasn't going to vote for the bill. Or he said, I voted for the bill, but he goes, others were not going to. It was designed to fail under the suspension of rules, he tweeted, as a cover vote because the House Republicans chose not to attach it to that foreign aid package. Now, you remember what I said about that big, giant, you know, 90-something billion-dollar foreign aid package, originally Mike Johnson had it to where it was split into four things, four different pieces, and you had Ukraine. You had Ukraine funding, Israel funding, Taiwan funding, and then there was going to be a fourth piece to that that was promised to be conservative wish list items, i.e. the border, which I think it's weird that that would be considered something for conservatives to get some stuff for the border. But it was supposed to be in that. And so H.R. 3602, they took it out of the in package. When it got to the Senate, they wrapped it up in one, but jettisoned anything that was in the fourth section of that. And so in the House, they had a show vote over 3602, and it had stripped all that, a lot of the teeth out of it. So that's it. That's how they did it. Johnson does not have a lot of political capital to work with. I mean, that's what happened when you have a speaker vote and you have no plan to replace the speaker. None. They had no plan. I mean, I'm still mad over it because I feel like even though you're not going to get a good speaker until you get a more conservative House, and the speaker's just essentially the average of the voting makeup of the Republicans in the House, you're not going to get a strong conservative in that position until you get a more conservative House. And remember, they have to work, even a speaker, they got to work and deal with some Republican or Democrats as well. So when they had this speaker fight, they did not have a single person in mind to step up and take McCarthy's spot. They were scrambling. Remember, the House could not really consider any other proposals. And I mean, they could deal with stuff in committee, but they couldn't deal with anything else on the floor until they got the speakership figured out. And now they're talking about doing it again over this. So Chip Roy was quite angry, understandably so, about all of this. And he had tweeted about it, a number of things. And this doesn't really bode well, I think, for Republican enthusiasm going into November either, because Republicans are, in many instances, their own worst enemies. The infighting, and especially with the power of the purse, the only thing that we control. And I hope you realize that we are on track to not keep the House. It's good. I mean, this could shape up to be disastrous. Some of the other polling as well is not looking good. But the House, particularly the power of the purse, Republican voters see this. What does it do to enthusiasm of getting you out? Think about it for yourself. Think about this for a minute. How do you feel about getting up and going out and voting for Republicans after witnessing what they passed through the House and what they didn't really fight after that and what they ended up wrapping up into one thing in the Senate? Does it make you excited to go out and vote for them? That's important. Does it make you excited to go? Because that's a measure of how likely you are actually to go out and vote. And then whether or not you're going to be sort of like an evangelist to maybe recruit voters yourself going into November. It's a drain on enthusiasm, and enthusiasm plays into voter turnout, and Republicans have always struggled historically with voter turnout. This isn't great. It wasn't great. With regards to the other aspect of that fund, that foreign aid bill, Roy notes that as it relates to the substance of the spending portion for Israel, they literally tied up humanitarian assistance for Hamas in a foreign aid package for Israel. And Roy and others say, and it's a $9 billion thing. Actually, it's almost $10 billion. And he says, it's absolutely going to fund Hamas. Of course it is. Because the NGOs that are already there have been in real time. They've been targeting the IDF. So we have $10 billion essentially in tech. And I say 10 billion, I'm rounding. I mean, it's almost 10 billion. Let's just round up. $10 billion. Not only are we expected, I can't imagine in any other, can you imagine a World War II? Well, you gotta fund, the Germans too. You gotta fund the Nazis. You gotta fund them. Can you imagine being told that you have to not only deal with the Allied powers, but then you have to fund relief for the Axis powers? It doesn't make any sense, but that's what we're doing here. And again, Hamas is absolutely going to get this money. It's not going to, they always say, of all the aid that's already been sent over there and all of the money that's already been spent for aid, why is it not reflective? Why can't you see it then? Because Hamas takes it all. Remember when they found like all of these, when they distributed these health kits, these med kits, and they found them in the tunnels and they found them at Hamas headquarters under the hospital in Gaza City, that Hamas had taken them and they had used it for themselves. They had taken a lot of the MREs. Remember the one guy, the video, who was complaining about the food packages that were distributed, I guess, because it wasn't a seven-course meal? They found a lot of those packages also in these Hamas headquarters after they raided it under the hospital and elsewhere and in the tunnels. And it's not being used for the people. Hamas is taking it and using it for themselves. So the fact that that's incorporated in this is asinine. That they were just, Democrats got everything that they wanted and Republicans didn't get a damn thing. Republicans did not get a single thing in this. Not a thing. And we haven't, what, 103, Roy says it's 113 billion that we've spent to Ukraine and only 45 billion of that went to quote unquote lethal aid. And so this is another 60 billion. And he said there's going to be more requests, including demands for rebuilding. And we have to borrow that because we don't have the money for it. So this is why you see inflation. It's why you see incessant government spending. And they're so in the hole, they feel like they have to raise our taxes on top of it. This is just, and it's their spending problem in addition to all of this. So we're borrowing to pay for a foreign conflict in which we have no skin. And I reject all of the truly neocon arguments about, well, Russia was going to blah, 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 Russia. No. They're ignoring our biggest geopolitical threat, China, in favor of trying to tell us that Russian imperialist fantasies are somehow big again. A couple of things, too, because we were talking about ongoing throughout the show, the World War II argument that the right seemingly bizarrely wants to have with itself. And we were fisking some of that, talking about, you know, the last days of Imperial Japan and how they were attempting there was an attempted coup before the surrender because they did not want an unconditional surrender. In fact, there was like a there's a couple of really great pieces on this. There's a there's also getting into the lead up of World War II, all of Japan's atrocities. There was a book out called Unbroken. That's a good read. But there literally was an attempted coup where they were trying to stop Japan's surrender. And it was called the Kyuzo incident. And they had members of their military and other members of their government that they led a whole battalion to the Imperial Palace. And they were demanding that leadership go. They were going to take over. They wanted to continue the war. There was no there was no consensus on unconditional surrender. And this was even after Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So when you hear people say there's a fake Eisenhower quote that's going out that I see people on the right sharing, like influencers on the right, and they're trying to say, well, Eisenhower and all these other military officials were saying that they had surrendered before the bombs. That is not, that's actually false. You want to talk about false flag stuff? There you go. That is absolutely historically illiterate and is demonstrably false. And shame on some of these people, especially some of these thirsty ass podcast hosts who rely on their entire production team to do their research so they can go on social media and say the dumbass stuff that they say. Shame on them for trying to get an audience and chasing engagement and chasing clicks, these thirst traps with these dumb quotes. That's so false. It, you know what? I hear all this stuff about, well, have you ever thought that the American government might be lying to you to cast this entity as an enemy? Have you ever once stopped to think that maybe America's geopolitical foes are telling you that America's lying to you in order for you to cast further aspersions on the character of your government, which granted hasn't done much to help itself in terms of respect and keeping your high esteem? But have you ever thought for one moment that maybe America's geopolitical foes are trying to further widen the divide between how Americans feel about their government and whether they feel that their republic is just and can continue operating? Because I know that if I was an opponent of the United States, I absolutely would be feeding that fire. Have you ever stopped to think of that? No, it only goes both ways or one way. It doesn't go both ways.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So a woman tried to board a flight at a Memphis airport with 56 pounds of pot, according to numerous reports in the Memphis police. It was had a United Airlines flight, Memphis International Airport. They found 56 pounds of marijuana in her luggage. She was charged with possession of a controlled substance with the intention to manufacture, deliver, or sell, according to Shelby County Jail records. It's a felony offense. And she's posted $5,000 bond. So I just can't. I mean, why did you think that you could take it to the airport? Apparently it was discovered. They caught her, her luggage busted open on a bag cart, and her name was attached to the bag. So she was subsequently arrested because everything spilled out. So that's, jeez. Oh my goodness. 15 people were injured in a Universal Studios tram crash. The tram, well, it was like their little bus. It was carrying tourists through their back lot. It struck a guardrail and tossed people from the vehicle on Saturday night. And yeah, they said it was passing the Jurassic Park exhibit. And it struck this guardrail and it just tilted and several passengers fell right out into the road. 15 had to go to the hospital for minor to moderate injuries. And they said it's not alcohol or drugs. They're still investigating. I think it sounded like speed. It sounded like the driver was just going too fast. Pilots were suspended after they allowed a passenger in the cockpit mid-flight. And there's not a lot of information yet about it. They were United Airlines pilots, but they let a Major League Baseball coach apparently sit in the captain's seat while the plane was flying. Okay, I actually don't think that they should be doing that mid-flight. But I don't know the nature of their suspension, but at the same time, maybe don't allow random people. I mean, after it's landed, that's fine. But while it's in the air, I mean, I don't know. I feel like anybody could hit a button, right? You never know. Stick with us. Stephen Yates is going to be joining us next.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you at the bottom of this third hour. And as you know, you can listen coast to coast. You can listen terrestrially. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program. And make sure you check out Substack Chapter and Verse as well. Okay, so we had this, the package that was passed, the Ukraine funding, the Hamas funding, the aid that was in the Israel bill. And then we also had the a little bit for Taiwan. We'll just throw a little bit their way to shut some of the conservatives up. And that's going to be considered conservatives getting what they wanted, which we all know we didn't. On that and a million other topics, I wanted to just go right to our very good friend Steve Yates, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute, chair of the China Policy Initiative. He joined. You can find him on X, yes, at Yates Comms. And he joins us now via Skype. Steven, so good to see you, as always. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the breakdown real quick of the funding of this aid package that passed, because, you know, we'll give a few billion to Taiwan, but we're going to give the bulk of it, three quarters of it, we're going to send over to Ukraine. Then we're going to fund Gaza, but not Hamas, right? That's going to be wrapped up in the Israel aid package because that's worked so well before, Hamas not getting their hands on it, correct?
Well, there's a lot that I don't like in this, which I'm sure will come as a shock to the audience. Number one, all these things are
in agreement. I know.
Well, these things are supposed to be so important. So if you'd think that when you're talking about billions of taxpayer dollars for a high national security priority, that you would talk this stuff through, that you would have relative consensus. Maybe these things are important enough to take up on their own merits each at a time. Maybe to have Americans and their elected leaders focus on those things. And it's a shame that they haven't had the time to do that because, you know, we're already in late April and apparently these things just snuck up on them to have to ram it through with very limited debate and review. I really, really intensely dislike that process. My grandfather told me not to use the word hate, but there's that process point. On substance, I just can't get off of the old rubs of when it comes to Europe, you cannot just shovel more and more American money and risk over in that direction without Europeans stepping up. And whether it comes to Russia or China for that matter, you can't be the Secretary of State going out there or the president blabbering on about how we're deterring people and we're standing up for allies if our allies like Germany are not cutting back on their sweetheart deals and tech transfer to this axis of evil. I mean, it just sort of, you blow in one ear and out it comes from the other, and there's just nothing in between, no thought on this. So it's just deeply, deeply frustrating. When it comes to the attack on Israel, why is this hard? I mean, either we have an ally or we don't. Support the ally. If the ally can afford to buy material, sell it to them. And when it comes to Taiwan, same deal. We've talked about it over and over. They'll buy. What's the blockage in the system? Where's the Miralax for arms to Taiwan? Get that stuff going.
And talking with our good friend Stephen Yates, you know, speaking of Taiwan and the purchasing of weaponry. So apparently Blinken he's going to be heading back to China. He's going to talk with them. The way that they present this in the media is that Antony Blinken is going to be going to China to condemn them and wag his finger at them financing Russia's munitions. Like apparently sending Moscow, if they're not financing it, they're sending them missiles, drone components, machine tools for missiles and drones, all of that. And he's trying to convince them. I love this first line. Curb the technical support for Russia's military or else. It's another don't moment, but this one's for China.
Yeah, and they're going to ignore every single word he has to say, even if they let him sit somewhere other than the kiddie table, which probably is his destination while going over there, because the leader of Germany just met with the Chinese leaders and undermined any notion that, oh, you better stop this or you're not going to be able to continue business as usual with Europe. I'd also really love it if we had an American Secretary of State, you know, who had as much of a heart for the Americans who are dead due to China as he does for Ukrainians who are dead by indirect support from China to Russia. I mean, it's terrible what's happened to the Ukrainian people. It should never have happened. But how about loving those Americans first and going there? If you're going to wag the finger and threaten to do something, how about 100,000 dead a year in America be your place to die? This whole idea of sticking up for Ukraine, waving Ukrainian flags on the house, all this is just divorced from planting your roots in America and protect our own people.
That's a great point. And it's interesting, too, that Germany and the United States, despite the fact that, you know, you would think that the allyship that we supposedly share, that we would kind of be on the same page with messaging to China. Nobody bothered to call and check, you know, I guess when Germany's leaders, nobody from our administration bothered to call them beforehand to say, hey, let's just get on the same page. I mean, teenagers do this when they're lying to their parents about where they're going to be the night before, the last night. They're like, make sure we're all on the same page. But countries can't even do this when it comes to averting conflict.
Now, these are all kids who didn't do their own homework in their privileged schools. They just go and they show up and they think other people will take care of the details. Their virtue speaks for themselves. Their superiority speaks for itself. Bad guys around the world are not impressed. And neither should we. I mean, it's really a travesty. There is a case to be made on these kinds of things. We would like to think that our elected and appointed leaders would give it forcefully, like they care about our country and results. But that's just not what they're doing. That's actually one of the underreported trends of this administration, that they actually don't consult with allies. They don't work on these things. They just sort of go out there and let America be the sharp end of the spear. And that might work if we were the big, bold power that everyone feared. But right now, they're just ignoring us with impunity.
And China's criticizing, China, their foreign minister, CCP's criticizing our role in the Israel-Gaza conflict. The Chinese foreign minister, Wang Yi, was reported, this is ABC News, criticized the United States for blocking the UN resolutions calling for a ceasefire in Gaza after meeting with his counterpart in Indonesia. Why are they weighing in on this? I mean, they have like a whole camp of people in Xinjiang. They have why are they weighing in on this?
No, I mean, it should be easy to push back against this propaganda, manipulation, information warfare. I mean, number one, there is no scenario in this universe that China isn't doing just as much to support the theocratic terrorist supporting regime in Iran as it is with Moscow and whatever's going on in Europe. And so you can't really wave your finger in their face and have any credibility on one account and not on the other. And when it comes to just this standing for picking on minorities and other kinds of things, I mean, good grief. How about you just go back to China and say, you've funded a mass casualty attack on Israel. When it comes to drones and sanction busting, you're the number one in the Middle East. How about you hold my beer for right now on this argument at the United Nations? Because this is just not your time.
Exactly. Not their time. And I'm curious, talking with our good friend Stephen Yates at Yates Comes on X, what their response, how they're going to handle if this passes the Senate, this TikTok ban that made it through. And that was one of the things apparently that was to, again, make the conservatives happy in this, you know, package of multi-billion dollar foreign aid. The measure requires ByteDance to sell, which is the parent company of TikTok, to sell TikTok. And apparently it requires the general counsel of TikTok to step down. I mean, you laugh because you don't think that's going to happen, do you?
No, I laugh because the whole argument that has been made in D.C. is that TikTok is just like every other social media platform and somehow compelling them to separate from Chinese Communist Party ownership and control, sever their financial ties from ByteDance is some kind of a threat to the First Amendment in the United States. I just have never understood how a lot of my friends bought into that line when this attorney has a foot on both shores. He's the attorney for ByteDance. He's the attorney for TikTok US. And there's a whistleblower that's basically said his full-time job was to shovel American data from one system into the other. It really shouldn't be controversial that major media, social media platforms in the United States should be forced to divest from the CCP. I'd love it if the Disney-owned corporations had to account for no Chinese money in their ownership structures too. But this shouldn't be controversial. And this attorney having a foot on both shores is just exhibit A about how it's just been a false claim that TikTok is like everybody else. The others, as bad as they are on all kinds of other ways, don't have this ownership and data sharing structure.
Yeah, I completely agreed. One last question for you, and this is a weird one because I hesitate to ask you because in some respects it's such a stupid argument and I cannot believe, you probably know where I'm going, how this is happening on the right where we are getting into what is happening to the right, where we're getting into this debate, not us, but certain people. I get the engagement farming. Maybe that's what it is. But there was this debate that erupted over the weekend, Stephen, where they were arguing as to people were arguing as to whether or not we should have ever dropped the atomic bomb in Japan as a way. His Stephen Yates's face is a gift just then. Your reaction, whether or not we should have done it and how evil it was. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've always been really into World War II. I'm very familiar with what Japan did in the two decades prior to World War, prior to Pearl Harbor. I'm very familiar with their gobbling up resources and their conflicts with China and the Philippines and all around Asia. I'm also very familiar with the coup. This is the post bomb coup, Nagasaki and Hiroshima, where apparently half the government didn't want to peacefully, they didn't want to surrender unconditionally. And so there wasn't even a consensus in their government. And then they had Katsu Go, which was their whole op. If there was any kind of invasion, I mean, they were ready to go until the last man, woman, or child. There was no way this was going to end peacefully. It seems like you're weighing, and in war, you have to just look at the numbers, several hundred thousand versus many millions more of people, including many American servicemen. You and I agree, I think, pretty much on everything. How do you weigh, what did you make of this whole debate? Why are we having this debate on the right now? It seems like a psyop planted by China.
Well, first and foremost, it is quite possibly the dumbest, most revisionist thing I have ever heard from people who claim to be speaking from history or knowledge of military or just plain old common sense. It is the last thing in the world. And even if you wanted to hold on to this fantastical revisionist notion, what's your prescription? You want the United States to disarm from this? Because guess what? The memo is out. The bad guys of the world already have or are pursuing vigorously this kind of deterrent and weapon. So do you want to live in a world where only evil people have this ultimate deterrent capability? Do you want to try to negotiate? Look at how bad we are at negotiating now when we have a lot of this capability and we haven't been modernizing it, but there's still the threat of something truly awful. My grandfather fought in the Pacific multiple tours. My knowledge of the theater is not just limited to his personal experience, but it's just astonishing how people will willfully remove themselves from the circumstances and realities of the time, and how it's so easy and casual to sit back and say, oh, we had tons of other options, because you didn't live through rationing. You didn't live through the need for mobilization. You didn't live through what the terror of Axis powers gobbling up large chunks of the planet was like. You didn't live with what it took to overtake fortified islands. And so it's easy for you to say, oh, my math is superior. We would have only had X thousand soldiers dead if we would attack the Japanese mainland at the time. But it's just an empirical fact. Those two bombs brought an end to a multi-year war. And as many dear friends I have in Japan now, and they truly are friends, they deserve to be treated normally. They are not the generation of World War II. But that generation of World War II did some catastrophically anti-humane things. These were not normal enemy combatants. They tortured people. They cannibalized people. They did truly awful, awful things. And that kind of a totalitarian mentality doesn't surrender unless it has met with something that is the end of them. And that's what the bombs were. And it's terrible that people had to die, but it was terrible that we had to have World War II.
Amen to that. I don't think anybody could have put it better. Stephen Yates at YatesComs on Twitter. All my best, my friend. It's so good to see you, and always appreciate your time with us. Have a great week.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
You too.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Now, a reminder, we're doing this thing where we're taking the for the next 2 weeks. I don't know if I'm going to be on air the next day because I have federal jury duty. I'm on call. And I literally don't know until the evening before the next day whether or not I have to go in. So it's really convenient for broadcasting, you know, when you work in broadcasting 3 hours a day every day. So there's a lot of stuff up in the air. So when I know, you all will know. And I'll send out, for those of you subscribers who get the show prep in the mornings, I will let you guys know, well, it'll be me or it may be somebody else. And then I don't even know how many days I'll be out if I get called in if I have to call to report. So I just, really going to earn my, what is it, like $8 a day or something like that? Yeah! Woo! Wouldn't even pay for gas, but yeah, super excited. Oh, goodness. But in the meantime, there will be stuff still coming out on the newsletter Chapter and Verse at Substack. So we got to take it. Unfortunately, we got to take it day by day. That's all I can do. Best I got. I feel like a Pawn Stars meme. Best I got. Day by day. That's all we can do. In the meantime, I have to tell you really quickly before we get going. I saw somebody at a restaurant over the weekend, two people that had their face masks on, like giant face diapers. And I didn't know that was still a thing. And I don't know how are you drinking a mimosa, sipping it, like pulling up your face mask, drinking a mimosa. And that kind of showed me it wasn't necessarily about a health issue. I don't know. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Today in stupidity, though, before I totally steal it from Steve, because he has a very... Michael Douglas, I was going to watch his Ben Franklin thing.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and said this, and now I'm like,
I think that's
what
he was trying to promote, but he was asked on CNN about the obvious, and here's what he had to say, cut 12-1, if you have this.
Well, I think that I walk a little similar to him. And the people that I've talked to and everybody that I have... say he's as sharp as a tack. He's fine. We all have an issue with memories. Mm-hmm. As we get older, we forget names.
No, we literally something. Don't. Not like
he's
that.
Overcome a stutter.
Oh, my gosh.
Stop
sometimes
it. Sometimes he might. But let's just say that his entire cabinet, including his vice president, everybody's
cabinet. Yeah, so this to me... is, I was going to watch his Ben Franklin thing. Now I don't want to. By the way, the Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea told Biden he should probably come and clean up the wreckage from World War II. I'm not even kidding. I'll have that tomorrow as well. Have a great night.